Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Sophia Quesa, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, Evanston's new pizza place, a retrospective on the Yoko Ono exhibit in Chicago, the secret lives of campus bunnies, and an episode of Fairweather Friends. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Looking for a midday slice or a cheesy late-night pie? You're in luck, because there's a new pizza place in town. Reporter Gabby Schell heads over to Pizzeria DeVille to see what the new joint is slicing up and serving.
For a city with under 100,000 residents, Evanston sure has a lot of pizza places. There are the big names like Domino's and Lou Malnati's, the mom-and-pop shops like Gigio's Pizza and DeSalvo's to grab a quick slice, and the more upscale eateries like Union Pizzeria, perfect for a date night or celebration. And now, there's a new spot on the block, Pizzeria DeVille, hoping to combine the three. DeVille opened March 27th in the former Giordano's location on Chicago and Davis. Owner J.R. Escobar says he and his team are bringing top-notch pizza catered specifically to the Evanston community.
So we like to say is we have an ordinary pizza for extraordinary people. So our focus is always bringing like the best pizza that people going to love. So what we really do is tailor to the community and you know, the equipment and the vibe and the space.
The Evanston joint is DeVille's second location. Escobar bought the original Libertyville shop back in 2023. He says DeVille focuses on perfecting the basics.
We use imported flour from Italy that's non-bromated, non-bleached. So it's really like the flour they were using in ancient times, you know? So it hasn't been messed with. There's no chemicals going into it.
The standard marinara sauce is made with fresh Roma tomatoes and a house-made garlic confit, cooked for the first time right before the pizzas are baked. And the mozzarella comes from a small worker-owned farm in Wisconsin. Escobar says they match DeVille's quality-first mindset. Local Merle Monroe stopped in with her husband for the first time this week. The pair ordered a simple tavern-style pizza. She says the quality was evident.
And it was very, very good, very authentic. It tasted like homemade, not like corporate. So it was very good.
And DeVille has much more to offer than just a plain cheese. Diners can order from over 20 pizza varieties, including out-of-the-box style offerings like its chicken and waffles pizza or the Chinese takeout Detroit style pie, alongside Evanston-specific creations like the Wild Kid, topped with sausage, two kinds of pepperonis, and a smattering of veggies. And the spot sells pizza by the slice from 11 to 3, helpful for curious patrons who might not be ready to dive into a whole pie. Escobar says the menu's creativity is one way DeVille caters to everyone who walks in.
We want to bring those events and give people a reason to come out and celebrate and gather with people around some wonderful pizzas and burgers and fries and, you know, drinks or whatever it is, you know.
If pizza's not your jam, DeVille still has you covered. The menu includes a variety of salads, sandwiches, and burgers, and a large selection of starters, including DeVille's hand-cut double-fried fries. There is one place Monroe says the menu is still lacking.
Now, they don't have their liquor license yet.
Escobar hopes that will change by May. The restaurant is planning to start a whole drinks program with beer, wine, and specialty cocktails as soon as it gets a license. Until then, diners can bring in their own alcoholic beverages to enjoy with their meal. Once the liquor program is running, Escobar plans to add Thursday night trivia and potentially a weekly karaoke session to the mix. DeVille already runs bingo at 7 on Tuesday nights. He says these community events are important to him, turning DeVille from just a restaurant into a gathering place.
I've tried about every pizza, and I know that we have some customers that really like to try every pizza, but I know the majority of the people find something that they love here, and that's what I like about it, is there's going to be something there that really speaks to you, where it's like, hey, this is my pizza.
So far, DeVille has already filled its entire dining room twice and hopes to serve even more of the Evanston community in the coming weeks as the weather improves and the restaurant opens its patio dining. This piece was made with production help from Ethan Penn. For WNUR News, I'm Gabby Schell.
A Yoko Ono exhibition recently closed at the Museum of Contemporary Art. Before its closure, though, a few lucky Northwestern students went down and performed in a concert dedicated to her. John Kowalski for WNUR News covered the concert.
This is probably unlike any music you've ever heard before. That piece you just heard was named Tear by Yoko Ono and, as you can imagine, had the student performers of the Northwestern Contemporary Music Ensemble tear a large piece of fabric apart. On February 18th, 2026, these students played at the Museum of Contemporary Art in downtown Chicago with a set list that was made up of music by Yoko Ono and John Cage, artists known for their avant-garde contemporary works. Walking into the auditorium that night, I found myself staring at a variety of instruments and objects on stage, from drums to kitchen equipment. The first work, Sky Piece for Jesus Christ, had the performers solely wrapped in bandages while they played Eric Satie's Gymnopédie. Slowly, the bandages would begin to restrict the performers until they couldn't play anymore. The crowd loved it, with laughter erupting from most everyone. Screeching, yelling, and a lot of noise being made from onstage followed through the next pieces, with their names like Takeoff and Clock Piece being taken both literally and figuratively. At one point, near the end, a performer gave a person who was sitting in the very front row a plate of apple slices. I spoke with her, Rachel Werfel, and asked her about her experience.
I felt very, like, honored to be able to have a snack.
Isabel Yang, the vocalist who gave Werfel the slices, explained the piece to me.
This is one of John Cage's arias from his songbooks, and I am instructed to make a gift of cranberries or apples and present them to someone in the audience.
Instructions are a key part of Ono's works, as Ben Bolter, co-conductor of the ensemble, described to me.
Well, what's amazing is, most music, of course, is written out, predetermined. Even a lot of Cage stuff actually has notes. But what's amazing is Yoko Ono's score, as it were, is just a bunch of single words for the movements.
This appealed to Yang, a senior at Northwestern studying voice who joined the ensemble out of her interest in performance art.
I really love Yoko Ono's pieces for orchestra, especially Peel, where we all share an orange together, as well as Touch. And those are entirely instructions that are like open and free. And so those are ideas that the ensemble came up with themselves on how we wanted to present that word.
The abstract nature of these pieces came as a challenge for the performers.
I think for most of them, it was very new, even for people who played new music. I think because, you know, we're at a school and people come here to play majors and they expect to have music in front of them and they're going to learn how to play a piece of music, that freedom, all of a sudden you have it.
The concert's connection with the museum came out of a collaborative effort between the conductors, Alan Pearson and Ben Bolter, and Maura Brennan, the director of performance and public programs at the museum. I spoke with her about this effort and the reasoning behind the date chosen.
February 18th is Yoko Ono's 93rd birthday. So we knew from the very beginning that the honor of having that exhibition up during her birthday was something we wanted to take full advantage of. Alan's scholarship also extends to John Cage, who is a very close collaborator, mentor, teacher, and peer of Ono. So he developed a really beautiful program in which the two artists are kind of in conversation with each other through their musical works.
But what about the relevance of the works today?
The way that Yoko Ono and John Cage respectively thought of freedom and constraint. Freedom and constraint, that's the world we're living in right now. I mean, quite literally locking people up. So I'm very, very moved that we have an opportunity to explore those really vital, urgent concepts through the work of these geniuses.
As I was getting ready to leave the concert, having just finished interviewing Rachel Werfel, that one attendee who was given apple slices, I ran back over to her and asked her one more question.
Hey, real quick, how does it taste?
Tastes awesome.
They did look pretty tasty. For WNUR News, I'm John Kowalski.
It seems like everywhere you go on campus, you'll see a bunny. Ever wondered why? Supriya Akella hops in with the story.
Seems like there's only one constant on Northwestern's campus, bunnies. Through snow, rain, and sub-zero temperatures, the bunnies remain exactly where you expect them to be, grazing on greens all over campus. Feeding on manicured lawns and hunkering down in the shade of campus buildings, the bunnies have formed a symbiotic relationship with Evanston's built environment. The bunnies we often see are eastern cottontails, a species of wild rabbit that is native to and abundant in Illinois. They are characterized by a brownish-gray fur coat, long ears, and big eyes. Dr. T.J. McGreevy is a research associate professor in the Natural Resources Science Department at the University of Rhode Island. He studies conservation genetics and applied ecology in relation to mammals like the eastern cottontail and the endangered New England cottontail.
So the New England cottontail is the only native cottontail species east of the Hudson River. The eastern cottontail is an invasive species that was brought by state agencies and hunter clubs in the early 1900s.
Despite being a non-native species in New England, the eastern cottontail has fared much better than its endangered relative. McGreevy attributes some of their success to their subspecies diversity.
There's about over 17 subspecies of eastern cottontail in North America, brought a lot of degradation by having multiple different subspecies. Maybe because of that, it seems to be much more adaptable, living in very urban areas, and they can be all the way up to rural areas and forested areas. So they have a wide range of adaptability. Others have coined them super rabbit. They're just so super diverse in that they've been able to adapt to so many different environments, whereas Lewin cottontail, they haven't gone through that process.
But these super rabbits aren't immune to everything. They still face a variety of threats. Brian, it seems like there's only one constant on Northwestern's campus, bunnies. Through snow, rain, and sub-zero temperatures, the bunnies remain exactly where you expect them to be, grazing on greens all over campus. Feeding on manicured lawns and hunkering down in the shade of campus buildings, the bunnies have formed a symbiotic relationship with Evanston's built environment. The bunnies we often see are eastern cottontails, a species of wild rabbit that is native to and abundant in Illinois. They are characterized by a brownish-gray fur coat, long ears, and big eyes. Dr. T.J. McGreevy is a research associate professor in the Natural Resources Science Department at the University of Rhode Island. He studies conservation genetics and applied ecology in relation to mammals like the eastern cottontail and the endangered New England cottontail.
So the New England cottontail is the only native cottontail species east of the Hudson River. The eastern cottontail is an invasive species that was brought by state agencies and hunter clubs in the early 1900s.
Despite being a non-native species in New England, the eastern cottontail has fared much better than its endangered relative. McGreevy attributes some of their success to their subspecies diversity.
There's about over 17 subspecies of eastern cottontail in North America, brought a lot of degradation by having multiple different subspecies. Maybe because of that, it seems to be much more adaptable, living in very urban areas. And they can be all the way up to rural areas and forested areas. So they have a wide range of adaptability. Others have coined them super rabbit. They're just so super diverse in that they've been able to adapt to so many different environments, whereas Lewin cottontail, they haven't gone through that process.
But these super rabbits aren't immune to everything. They still face a variety of threats. Brian Kraskavich is an ecologist with the Forest Preserve District of DuPage County.
So the eastern cottontail is what we would call a prey species. They provide food sources for other animals, such as coyotes, foxes, hawks, owls. So that's kind of their role.
These are major threats for campus bunnies. An anonymous user on the Northwestern social media forum, Fizz, recently posted a video of an unsuspecting baby bunny being scooped up by a bird in the sorority quad. But living in built environments comes with some benefits.
I think they do find some protection, you know, around these homes or in the neighborhoods. There may be less coyotes, less foxes, so they're able to, you know, find some more protection that way.
In the spring, the cottontails mate and have babies, potentially making them more vulnerable to danger. McGreevy says the male rabbits face the most significant threat.
They're more susceptible to predation because they're moving around, especially the males, because they'll have larger home ranges that will overlap multiple females. And the more that you're moving around, the more chance you're going to come across predator.
As we see more baby bunnies pop up around campus, it's tempting to consider adopting one. After all, who wouldn't want an adorable super rabbit as a pet? But McGreevy cautions against approaching wild bunnies.
They can have diseases that can be transmitted to people. One of them is tularemia, which in the past it had been fatal. Rabbits have ticks that can transmit diseases to people. There's one that can even cause meat allergy, which is not that great if you enjoy eating meat. For the most part, I wouldn't try to approach or handle any wildlife.
Kraskavich agrees.
wild animals, you know, are probably best left alone. So if they feel threatened or trapped, they will react in a way that could be aggressive. Rabbits can bite and scratch you.
Marsha Coburn is the president of Chicago's Red Door Animal Shelter, which is one of very few local shelters that rescues domesticated rabbits, in partnership with Dumped Bunny, a similar organization. She says there are important distinctions that prevent wild rabbits from being pets.
They're completely different species than pet rabbits or domestic rabbits. So the wild rabbits obviously are bred and live outside. They can't really ever be domesticated.
Coburn says that for many, seeing eastern cottontails thrive in the open can result in neglectful treatment of domesticated rabbits.
And I think if people don't understand there's a difference, they might feel like, well, I see rabbits outside all the time, so why can't I just dump my pet rabbit that I don't want anymore outside and it can just fend for itself and run around with these rabbits? And a pet rabbit dumped outside faces a horrible death. It's either going to die from exposure, it's going to be attacked by coyotes, hawks, all kinds of raccoons, or it could get parasites, which will kill it. So it's a big difference, and we work hard to educate people on the difference between them, and I think we have been successful.
However, she says there's still plenty of confusion. In the spring, many feel compelled to bring abandoned wild baby cottontails to the shelter.
People sometimes mistakenly say, oh, well, I saw this nest and there's no mom, so there must be no mom. And so if they bring them to us, we say, you've got to go put them back. Put them back as best you can, exactly where you found them. Mother rabbits do not hang out with their litters, unlike cats and kittens. The mother of a wild rabbit will only go to the nest once or maybe twice a day to nurse the rabbits. The rest of the time, the baby rabbits are on their own.
But if you do see a domesticated bunny in the wild, Coburn has some advice.
Call or email or Facebook Red Door or Dumped Bunny and let them know where the rabbit is as specifically as you can. Try to take a picture of it too. The ultimate goal is trying to get a photo and letting people who have a lot of experience know where it is so it can get saved.
And if you see a wild rabbit that is obviously injured or truly orphaned, Wildlife Illinois recommends contacting a licensed wildlife rehabilitator, such as Flint Creek Wildlife or Willow Creek Wildlife Center. Enjoy the company of our campus bunnies, but maybe don't get too close. For WNUR News, I'm Sapria Kella.
Apologies for that technical difficulty. Hopefully you were still able to catch the full piece. If not, it will be up on our website, WNURnews.org. Anyway, this has been the rainiest start to spring in Chicago's history, but that's not the only wild water-related fact Juliet Allen has for you today. Stay tuned to find out what's in store for next week's weather and uncover a mysterious phenomenon happening in our very own Lake Michigan.
Hi, I'm Juliet. Welcome back to Fairweather Friends. Each week, we give you a peek into the local and national weather. I promise the title is going to make sense in a minute. From Evanston, Illinois, this is Fairweather Friends.
Here's the weather.
As usual, Chicago spring weather has been all over the board. But if you've noticed an unusual amount of rain this year, you'd be correct. In fact, this has been the wettest start to spring in the city's history. In the first half of April, it rained 14 out of 16 days, measuring a total of about 5.5 inches. The National Weather Service reported that this is 366% above the average for mid-April. But enough with the past. Looking forward to next week, the forecast looks a little bit more optimistic. Saturday will be sunny with only 15% cloud cover, but it will also mark a drop in temperatures compared to the tail end of this week with a high of only 55. Sunday will be warmer with a high of 61, but beware of 20-mile-per-hour winds and 50% cloud cover. Monday should hopefully be our last bit of rain until next Saturday, but it might be a doozy with a high chance of precipitation and potential thunderstorms throughout the day. The rest of the week is looking a bit more consistent. You can expect clouds and temps ranging from the upper 40s to the upper 50s. As always, keep an eye on the feels like temperature. Nothing ruins a well-planned outfit like unexpected wind chill. As we anxiously wait for the last chills of winter to disappear, we can look forward to idyllic days out on the lakefront. But be careful, because there's something sinister lurking in our beloved Lake Michigan. We've all heard about the infamous Bermuda Triangle, the mythic area in the North Atlantic where ships and aircrafts mysteriously vanish. But have you heard of the Lake Michigan Triangle? The area covers around 3,800 square miles of the lake and is known to be the site of strange occurrences. In the 17th century, a French sailing ship and her entire crew mysteriously disappeared passing through the region. That was just the start. Since the 1800s, people have reported increased shipwrecks, missing vessels, and even UFO sightings. Some people say that the Lake Michigan Triangle is a myth. They argue that many of the strange occurrences can be explained by population trends and nature. Meanwhile, conspiracy theorists say that the region is a negative energy vortex caused by a prehistoric structure found underneath the water in 2007. Thankfully, Chicago's shoreline is far outside the boundaries of the Lake Michigan Triangle, so this summer you can sail and splash in the water to your heart's content. But it doesn't hurt to stay vigilant. That's all for this week's edition of Fairweather Friends. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay out of the rain and out of the Lake Michigan Triangle. In Evanston, Illinois, Juliet Allen, WNUR News.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. The nice weather could only last so long, as Saturday sees us encroaching into jacket territory with a high of 47. Sunday brings about more of the same with cloudy skies, while Monday seems poised to give us some rain, especially later at night. So do yourself a favor, take some time today to savor this spring weather before we plunge back into Midwestern gray. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe, Northwestern's Associated Student Government has announced its intentions to have a free legal clinic in the fall to provide legal advice to students on minor charges as well as helping connect students with resources. Modeled on a similar program in the graduate school with a $7 fee, this undergraduate version will seek to not have this entry payment for students and will be covered instead by the ASG funds. The team is currently working to contract a lawyer to work these clinics for roughly 10 hours a month. Life expectancy in Chicago has seen an increase in its highest levels to date since the pandemic. Black Chicagoans in particular saw dramatic growth in expectancy with an increase of 5.6 years from 67.7 years in 2020 to 73.3 years in 2026. However, factors like continued investment in majority black neighborhoods in Chicago can help improve conditions even more, as many majority black neighborhoods in Chicago see overall lower life expectancy rates compared to other ones in Chicago. President Trump has announced today that he will be sending Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to Pakistan tomorrow in order to meet with Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi. This follows the current standoff in the Strait of Hormuz and escalating conflicts between both Iran and the U.S. and Lebanon and Israel. However, Araghchi has not confirmed that a meeting will be happening, leading to uncertainty on what actually will be occurring. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 89.3. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Ethan Pan, and our reporters are Gabby Shell, John Kowalski, Supriya Akella, and Juliet Allen. I'm Sophia Kesa. Catch our next newscast Monday, April 27th. Now, back to scheduled programming.